How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of That Little Podcast. I hope you're doing well. Edition number 25 of the 2021-2022 season. Today, we're going to be previewing in part two. I'll say part two first, our trip to Huddersfield on Saturday. And in part one, we'll be a general chit-chat between myself, Omer, and my regular co-host, Mickey. Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, not too bad, fella. Not too bad at all. You?
Yeah, not bad. And also, of course, we've got Kai here with us as well. How are you, pal? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good, mate. Looking forward to a little bit of chatting about Millwall.
Yeah, obviously Saturday's coming up as well. Looking forward to that. Myself and Kai are going up there on Saturday. So no pressure, Kai, but I'm hoping to see a vlog as well. So it should be good fun. But yeah, we'll talk about that obviously in part two. But part one is coming up right away. Before we leave this part, obviously, be sure to like the video, subscribe if you're new. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, be sure to give us a review. It's always appreciated. And just give general feedback. We always appreciate that. So we'll go into part one now and obviously talk all things Millwall. Welcome to the first part of the show. Guys, I thought what I'd do today is obviously we've got no game to review because there's no midweek game, but I think we can just review the last five, six, seven, eight games in general. Obviously, hot topic at the moment is 4-4-2. Mickey, you weren't with us on Monday's show, so to speak, but obviously I just wanted to get your take obviously on Saturday's performance just gone and obviously switching to 4-4-2 when we scored two goals, mate. I mean, it's a hot topic. Hot topic, isn't it? But I mean, I guess it kind of proves Millwall is a 4-4-2 club at heart, or I don't know, what does it prove for you anyway? What did you think of it?
I think the problem is that the players we got playing at the club are of that certain age where they've probably been brought up on 4-4-2 style and they know how it works, they know it's proven, and it's especially at home, it works. And I think a lot of that is that they just don't get their heads around the other formations, changing it all over the place. Because when I grew up, there was 4-4-2, maybe a couple of other formations. But now there seems to be about 347 different formations to play football. I just think that they probably feel comfortable playing 4-4-2. And it showed that 20 minutes where they were playing, whether or not it's by accident that they had to go 4-4-2, but that 20 minutes or so just lit up the crowd. Was with them, the crowd become the 12th man, they looked more energised, they looked as if they were ready for it, and it just proves the point, you stick the balls into that area and someone's going to finish them, i.e. Bradshaw.
Are we overthinking or overplaying the 4-4-2 on Saturday? That's what I want to know. I mean, is it a case of it was going to happen regardless? Or is it because the formation happened and maybe it's not necessarily the players react to it, but also Kai, Mickey mentioned it there, like the deep-rooted kind of, I suppose in a sense, the DNA of Millwall and recent successful teams have always had this kind of foundation of a 4-4-2. We go back through the generations, it's always been that kind of fixated thing. Obviously, modern football these days, like Mickey said, there's hundreds of different alternatives, hundreds of different ways of playing. But is it necessarily the players fed off it, or was it maybe the fans brought the players into the kind of game and vice versa? I mean, obviously, we was there on Saturday and, the atmosphere was, like how Mickey said there, chalk and cheese, really, as soon as we kind of went for the game a bit more, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think everyone was really excited to see what the Millwall team could do as soon as they went to 4-4-2. And they didn't disappoint, did they? They were getting balls in. They were working the channels. And they just looked really dangerous. So Stoke couldn't deal with us in that 20-25-minute spell. And you go back to Harris when he was in charge, and we were so successful that season. It was a 4-4-2, wasn't it? We had Morrison and Gregory up top. Big target, man. I know Rowett plays a bit more through the thirds with, even with a 4-4-2, trying to get the ball on the ground. But it does sort of go back generations as a Millwall fan. 4-4-2 has been, quite a regular formation for us. And, Rowett's come in and changed that. And we've had a lot of success, in fairness to him. We've had a lot of success. But, I think it was important on Saturday against Stoke to turn to that 4-4-2, because all of a sudden it just changed the game, changed the dynamics and really lifted the fans off the seats.
I kind of want to go a bit more kind of deeper with this, because, obviously, we say it and we talk about it on the show, and I think, other people have covered it, and a lot of people said it online as well. You can't take away that identity of Millwall, and whilst you try, managers have tried in the past, they tend to fail. But if you, in isolation, take away that game, we're still, Mickey, one of the form teams in the league. But it's when you look at the home and away form, home before Saturday, I think we was statistically like the 18th best team in the league for the last 10 games. You know, the form dipped. Like, our form at home hasn't been great. We've lost two at home before Saturday's game. It was, I think it was played six, won two, drawn two, lost two. Whereas when you compare the away form, we've got on paper the third best form in the league, where we only lost one game away from home. Obviously, we picked up two wins, four draws. The form is really similar. And I guess that ultimately lies the kind of conundrum of the formation. You know, it's good if you play that away from home and you pick up draws here or there, you know, and get the occasional win and be hard to beat. But at home, it's not necessarily being hard to beat. It's more so taking the game to the opposition, isn't it? And that's kind of like the catch 22. And I think that's why, especially before Saturday's game, a lot of fans are kind of disheartened with the way Wright plays at the Den.
Well, yeah. And the trouble is that a lot of teams away play at 5-3, you know, the same formation. So pretty much you're sort of, you're playing off each other. You sort of, it becomes a stalemate as such. But then all of a sudden, when you change it to the 4-4-2, it's suddenly, you know, you've got a solid back four line. It's easier to play certain things, easier to get them offside, easier to make the attacks. You've got the midfield more free. And it just looks for a much better game of football. For us, all we want is enjoyable football where you can start shouting about, getting excited, getting off your seat, you know, ups and downs and everything else. But some days when you're playing the 5-3-2 or the 3-3-2-1, fucking whatever you want to call, you know, whatever other position there are, you're just sitting there knowing what's coming. And it's like, I mean, something what you boys picked up on the show, what we put out on the video, on the clip, is that there was no corners on Saturday. And that's normally what we're down and out for. It's all those set plays. You know, we play to get the set plays to suddenly stick the balls in and that'll be our chance. But on Saturday, it looked as if, you know, especially with a 4-4-2, we swing the ball in and then there's someone there to finish it. And that's what we've been lacking most of the season, is those, you know, those easy finishes for a poacher-type striker.
Numbers in the box, isn't it? It's like committing bodies forward, throwing bodies forward, and kind of, I guess, balancing the risk and reward. You know, if you throw more players forward, you might be kind of vulnerable to a counter-attack. But at the same time, if you've got more players to build from in the final third, then you've got more options for scoring goals, haven't you, Mickey? I think that's kind of the struggle, isn't it? And it's, I think, Kai, you know, like you know what I'm saying here, like, obviously, the 5-2-3 we play, there's about 7, 8, 9 different teams in the Championship that play this formation nowadays as well. And obviously, you look at Chelsea last year, winning the Champions League as well. You know, it's kind of, and obviously England getting to the Euros finals and Italy play the exact same formation as well. Is it an evolving kind of thing of football? And obviously, you know, a lot of clubs are trying to adopt this kind of style of play, aren't they? And it's obviously, for Millwall, Millwall fans, it's hard to get their head round. But at the same time, if it's getting results, what side do you sit on? Do you prefer results or do you prefer performances, or do you want a bit of both? How do you kind of, what side do you sit on that one?
I guess you want a bit of both, but, you know, mostly you want results. You know, I think if it's played in the right way, like teams like West Brom do, you know, it can be really exciting and you can get the wing backs really high. Sometimes I just question whether we, you know, rush things a bit too much and try and, you know, get it straight up to Bradshaw or Phoebe, and therefore, because we don't play it through the thirds, the midfield is a little bit sort of, well, pointless in a way. If not, if it's, you know, if they don't play through it, it's sometimes a bit pointless. Or sometimes, you know, we tend to give it into midfield. There's no one running off of it, so they just pass straight back to the defence, who then try and work down the wings. And, you know, it's very easy as a five to block that off with the other two wing backs being quite high on our two wing backs. So yeah, it depends on where you play. If you play it well and play it right, it can work. But you know, and it can be exciting, but it's just the way you play it.
I mean, you look at the Championship right now, right? So you've got teams up there. The top two teams are the best sides, as in the sense of, like, you know, Bournemouth and Fulham play back four, but they've also got the players that back it up, where, you know, they can get away with playing more players in attacking areas and they go to basically dominate the ball, see teams off and win the game comfortably. But Middlesbrough are a team that play a back five, Kai. You said, obviously, about West Brom, they play a back five. I think Luton played a back five against us. You know, like, these, there's a lot of teams that play this formation. Even Stoke, they were matching us up on the weekend. They played the same formation. And spoiler alert, on Saturday, Huddersfield play a back five as well. Why do you think that is, if you have to try and hazard a guess, Kai? Is that because, like I said, football's evolving? Or is it because you see teams are successful and teams try to emulate it? Or what kind of, you know, why is that a thing nowadays?
I think it's evolving, but I think it gives you, I think it's It's supposed to be able to pass the ball around more, isn't it? Because if you can stretch teams down the wings, then you can try and get it in back in and to the strikers. There's a few obviously different formations. You can play 3-4-3 with the two wing backs pushing up high. You can play 5-3-2, 5-2-3. So there's a couple of different ones. Also, the one that I've noticed, most of the teams that play five at the back, they tend to put long throws into the box because of their three centre backs. So it's a little bit of a sort of how it works together. You know, if we have three centre backs, then we're more likely to put long balls into the box, especially if we've got Smudge up top, who, you know, that's basically like a fourth big target man in there. So, you know, I think it could be towards, you know, looking at the sort of winning the ball high and winning the ball in the air and then building from there. But the only thing with a five is that if you've got three big centre backs, you know, if you've got a quick player, quick nippy striker, you're going to struggle because they're going to get it behind. So the wing backs almost need to deal with them. So it can be successful. It can't. Sometimes it's not successful. But I think the reason is I think they've just seen other teams have success with it and therefore tried it. Sheffield United were the first team that I really saw play five at the back, and they got to the Premiership with it, didn't it? And then it sort of started from there.
They kind of had them already in centre halves either side, and like the kind of overlapping centre halves in the sense where you got the wing backs kind of playing the wide areas, and the centre halves are getting into the kind of middle of the park, but also kind of crowding the midfield out. I mean, Mickey, like, is it a case of, because I was thinking about this today, and I'm thinking, and I am quite critical of the formation at home. Away from home, I'm happy with it. Like I said, you know, the away form is, you know, superb. I think the third best in the league, like I said, so far this season, after the amount of games we've had, or it was anyway before Saturday's game. You know, it's a team we're built on being quite solid and hard to beat. Our goal difference is with zero. That's the problem, I think. Yeah. You know, we've got 15 goals, which is, if you look at the teams in and around us, it's the least in the league. You know, you go to the bottom of the table and, yeah, of course, like, you know, Barnsley, Hull, Derby, that, you know, Cardiff, they're struggling for goals, but they're down the bottom of the table. Whereas somehow we've got a goal difference of zero, but we're still in and around it, but we've got the least amount of goals up there. Is it a case of the formation stops us creating more chances and goals? Or is it, you know, if we scored 25 goals at this point instead of 15 goals, would we still have the same criticism of the setup? Have we had many chances either to score goals? I don't think we have. And that's why I think I don't like the formation personally at home, because it limits us going forward. We don't have as much creativity and we rely on Jed a lot of it as well. Whereas you see Saturday, we went to a back four and we got more attacking players. Jed wasn't involved in either goal. Do you know what I mean? Like, where do you kind of sit on that? And is it a case of we're just not scored enough and that's what we're really upset about, not necessarily formation?
Yeah, it's probably a touch of all of that, to be fair. It's definitely a touch of we're not scoring enough. But then I honestly think that a formation is stopping us getting in that final third to be able to put the chances in. I mean, some games we can get in, you know, we can get in behind them, because some days we can get right down the wing, they sort of leave open, and we can get down the left or the right wing, we seem to be able to bring in. But the shots we do, they're chance shots rather than, you know, like what Saturday with Poacher, you know, that was a typical striker position where Brad was, and he proved it. It was one from the left, one from the right, Boff, or one from the left, one from the right, one from the left, whichever way first. But They were simple goals, what any striker worth his weight will get.
We don't get those chances in games aside from counter attacks either, do we? But whereas they weren't counter attacks, flying forward, weren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, it was something what was said on Wall Talk with Neil Harris, where Neil Harris was asked about his record, and he's like, you know, I don't think anyone's really going to beat my record for a while, because you've got to be, you know, realistically, you've got to be scoring 20 goals a season for, you know, 6, 7, 8 seasons, or, you know, you've got to be there longer and score more. And I don't think we've got anyone at the moment who's going to be scoring them. And I think a lot of that's down to the formation. A lot of that's down to the fact that we're not getting chances. But if you look at Gary Rowick's coaching tips on that coaching site we found the other week, where we were looking, the way he wants to play, the way he was teaching those players to play through midfield, we're not necessarily playing like that. But if that's what he's trying to get the players to do, then I think that will open us up. Rather than hesitating where you want to put the ball to, it's basically, look, get ready, there's the ball, run, pass, and it's very fast passing football, which is very, very continental. It's very Italian, very Spanish. You know, they like to play with a football on the ground. And I think for tradition, we've played differently over here in England. We've played traditionally hard tackling, you know, big centre-back football. And we're trying to evolve, like, you know, like Kai said. And I think that's the problem, is that are we evolving now too young? I mean, I think the younger players coming through probably play more easily in that formation. But the guys who are, you know, 25 upwards, probably not necessarily into that new way of playing. But England, you know, England, the younger players seem to be playing fine. It's just the older players where, you know, maybe it's a lot harder for them to be able to fit into that formation when, you know, I suppose it's like anything. If you've been trained a certain way and then all of a sudden you're asked to do it slightly different, it's going to take you a while, and whether or not you'll be able to fulfill it, that you don't know, do you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's. I just think because the criticism is always we want to be entertained, Kai. You know, we've not been entertained. Saturday was entertaining, wasn't it? It was up and at them. And for what I know as Millwall sides from since the early 2000s when I started going, obviously because I'm a bit younger than Mickey, no offence, Mickey, you know, I've not had anything. The exciting Millwall performances aren't necessarily the pretty football, but it's where it's like up and at them, get the ball into the final third, then play your football there. That's what Neil Harris always said, like when he was the manager, you know, get up to Morrison, play off that, get the likes of Jed into the game in the further up the pitch instead of them sitting deep and, you know, not really affecting the game. Whereas with Rowett, it's more of a kind of counter-attacking, you know, transitional kind of thing where get the ball quickly forward up the pitch. I kind of think, like, I want to talk about earlier, like I said, I don't know if it's the formation I'm bothered about. It's more so the lack of numbers committing forwards. And it's with that, like, that's probably what it is. It's like, we've not really, when we're saying we want to be entertained, do we actually just want to celebrate goals and enjoy the football? Because when you're sitting at home games and you don't score many goals, you know, at home this season, we've only scored 8 goals in 7 games. Like, that's not entertaining. That's not fun to watch. You know what I mean? It's, and there's also a couple of games in there where we've not scored at all at home, which happens. But where we're under Neil Harris, you know, you'd go into the game thinking we're going to score a couple today at home, especially when we're up for it. You can tell when the side's up for it. Whereas with Rowett's side, it's more kind of you get the same consistent performances with the formation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we must grow into the game, don't we? Mm. We sort of struggle. We tend to always struggle early on and then, you know, grow into it and then look the superior team. And I think that's what it is with attacking football. We need to sort of try and see if we can get on the ball a little bit more and look to control possession, because we've got the players to do it. I do believe we've got the players to do it. So, yeah, if we can do that, it'll improve. And I wanted to ask you two. I was talking to my granddad about this today, and we were just talking about Manchester City as an example. And funny enough, we were talking about Harry Kane and saying how Harry Kane hasn't scored many goals this year, but if he was at City, we think he would have scored many, many more goals. And my granddad even went to the fact that saying if Bob Farson was in that City team, he thinks he would score goals because of the amount of chances that City create. You know, is that something that, you know, it's about creating chances, isn't it?
I think I'm a shit footballer, right? I'm below even Sunday League level, right? But I think even I would get 5 goals in Man City's team and just put me on the penalties, and then hopefully I'd score at least a couple that way. So, but I think it's true. Bob Farson probably would score in a Man City team because it's a team full of, you know, outstanding players. But I guess the players like Harry Kane, are, when it comes to the big occasion, there's only one chance in the game. That's when you'd hope you back him to score it, if that makes sense. So, I think that's probably why Bud Farson plays for Millwall, or doesn't even play for Millwall anymore. He doesn't get into the team or the squad. But yeah, it's true. Like, you know, I just think it's the lack of bodies getting forward, Kai. That's what bothers me the most. And obviously, when you're under pressure, you expect your wing back to tuck in, help the centre halves out, and kind of sit back. But I think it's too much where when we get the ball as well, like in the first half on Saturday, when we'd done the vlog, Evans was getting caned, wasn't he, in the first half? But it's because he kept getting the ball and tries to play over the top. And it was kept, you know, either over here or it wasn't getting down to the right areas, was it? And I think it's also a bugbear of mine where there's no pattern of play for this Millwall team. You know, there's no identity to the style of play. It's obvious we have 3 centre halves on the pitch. We play 2 wing backs that like to get forward. And then obviously you got Jed up front. But for me, the pattern of play is give the ball to Jed, hope Jed does something good. And that's not an ideal and practical thing to carry through a whole season. I think it's kind of, you don't see any identity to this Millwall team that says that's Gary Rowett's Millwall team, if that makes sense.
No, and I think, you know, we need to get Ojo into the game a bit more because we saw what he could do. And I don't think Ojo's game is technically, you know, necessarily winning duels. I mean, obviously you want players to win duels and you know, you want them to win tackles. But I think Ojo's game is very much up the right side of the pitch, and and looking to create chances, in the opposition's half. So we need to get him on the ball, get him on the ball wide, and look for him to put balls in, whether Smith's in the box, whether Phobie or Bradshaw in the box. You know, depending on who's in the box, you want, maybe with Smith, you want ball in the air. With a Phobie or Bradshaw, you want the ball along the ground, and and try and attack their team down the wings and then get the balls into the box. I think that's the way we would probably try and break teams down, rather than trying to get it to Jed and then Jed creates on it, because it's very easy for the opposition to then mark him out of the game. Mm-hmm. And we don't have another player with Ojo. And I think Leonard was excellent in the second half the other day. As soon as he went into the midfield, not only do they have Jed and Ojo on the wings, they had Leonard driving with them, driving at them with the ball. And he could have gone either way. He could have gone to Ojo, he could have gone to Jed, he could have gone to, even could have slotted Bradshaw through the middle. Mm-hmm. So it's so much more, there's so many more, when there's more bodies forward and we break quicker, we look a lot stronger and a lot more dangerous.
I think it's also, break quicker, but also you throw bodies forward. I think Leonard was brilliant, like you said, on Saturday when he got into the midfield, because he committed to go forward and took the ball and travelled with it as well. And maybe our midfielders, when it's Saville and Evans, they don't do that enough, because Evans gets the ball to his feet and tries to make a pass and use his strength to beat players. He's not going to carry the ball 30, 40 yards like Leonard does. And I mean, Mitchell at times did that as well on Saturday when he got the chance to. It'd be interesting to see what kind of setup he goes for on Saturday. I'm sure we'll talk about that in part two. But I don't know. I think we've kind of covered that enough, haven't we? I mean, it's just obviously a hot topic, isn't it, at the moment, Mickey? Is it a case of is it the formation at fault, or is it maybe just, we've not scored enough and gone forward with it, but maybe we're not scoring enough because of the formation? It's catch 22, isn't it? And you're on mute. Of course you are.
There we go.
Welcome, Mickey. Welcome.
Hello, welcome. Yeah. Just call me Neil Warner. Oh, no, sorry, wrong show. It is a tricky one, because when we played the right formation, we scored two goals really easily.
And it was easy, wasn't it? It
looked easy. Yeah. And it looked as if, if we'd have kept playing like that for the rest of the game, we probably could have scored another two or three. So I don't know. I think Gary wants attacking football, and I think that's what he's aiming to do. If you look at the coaching sessions on that coaching website, what he did, it looks as if he wants attacking football. He wants fast, free-flowing football, which, to be fair, in a championship would work, because there ain't many teams, the top one, or when Fulham come, it was very fast-moving football, and that's what you want. You want that sort of level, and you'll be able to take people apart. But at the moment, I don't know. It's probably getting there, but at the moment, we're just not having enough chances. And, it's it. But I think the 4-4-2 debate will go on forever and a day, mate.
You'll rumble on. This isn't my point, really.
5-3-2-1, fucking 6-7-9-4. And
clubs have identities. You look at Arsenal, it's, Arsene Wenger put a stamp on Arsenal where it's good to see football. Yeah, of course he did. And then also, you go back, George Graham, the 1-0 to the Arsenal song stemmed from that, 1-0, Arsenal shut up shop and they see the game out. But, like I said, Wenger, it was a, more continental style football, came in, kind of changed it a little bit. And then you think of Chelsea teams with Jose Mourinho in charge. It was Joe Cole on the right. It was Lampard in the middle, Drogba up front. There was like an identity to that team of a 4-3-3. You see this formation straight away. Ferguson, 4-4-2. Solskjaer, Sheringham, York, Cole up front. Nat Van Nistelrooy and Rooney more recent times. I think with Millwall, we kind of cling on to them memorable moments. Sheringham and Cascarino up front. Harrison Moody up front. Then you go fast forward, it's a Morrison and Harris up front. Then it's Gregory and Morrison up front. It's always because there's a focal 2 point up front, isn't there, Kaya? And I think that's it's hard then for Mill fans to not think of them good times, especially when the football at home is drab to watch and there's not a lot of entertainment going on, is there?
No, definitely. And I think it can be, sometimes a little bit hard to watch. And sometimes we don't go as, we're not as attacking as I'd like. And I wonder, I don't know what you two think of this, but obviously in the Millwall, backroom staff, we have I think most of the coaches are all defensive. Ex-defensive players. So I just wonder whether maybe it might be a good idea to bring in an attacking coach or something.
Steve Morrison.
I mentioned him yesterday, but just something to give us a little bit of a different dimension, I wonder.
It'd be interesting to see how big good old Steve gets on at the weekend with Cardiff City. I think I'm intrigued to see how he does there. A bit of an off-tangent thing, but I hope he does, you know, gets enough crack, a fair crack of the whip, because, you know, they're away at Stoke, and obviously we saw Stoke on Saturday. Be interesting to see how Steve Morrison gets him firing at Cardiff, because obviously he's got a couple of games to prove himself, I suppose.
No, 100%. You know, look, let's leave the 4-4-2 say that. I wish Steve all the best in the world. I fucking can't stand Cardiff, but, you know, but...
To finish Kai's point, though, I think we was always linked with Kevin Phillips, because Kevin Phillips was a coach at Derby with Wright, wasn't he? And I think he then went to Stoke, maybe, or Birmingham. He was involved with Wright a couple of times at a couple of clubs. And in the summer, it was like, when that coaching advertising was there, everyone was thinking, well, I did anyway. Kevin Phillips might have a fair shout to get the job. Paul Robson got it. Maybe Kevin Phillips wasn't interested, and I don't know what he's doing now himself anyway, but maybe we do need a striking coach. But at the same time, I don't know. Is that because Harris was a striker? Yeah, he knew what he wanted from his old Millwall teams when he was a player. Maybe that's why he worked on Morrison and Gregory as much as he did. The same reason why maybe our defenders look the best players now, because Gary Rowett was a defender. Maybe that is a trait that, you know, does carry through in football, I suppose, isn't it?
Definitely. Well,
they reckon as well, don't they? The worst people in football, the worst people who are managers are strikers, because there's just, you know, they're the worst managers as such, because they're just, you know, set in their ways. They're just how it is. But
that is interesting. Like, it's an interesting thought, that, because, like, also, I think, was Mark Robbins a striker? Well, I can't remember. He's obviously the Coventry manager, and he's quite successful. But when you think of, like, the top level managers, if they are players, Guardiola's a midfielder when he back in his day, wasn't he? It is interesting, like, obviously, and from Millwall point of view, K Jacket was a midfielder. Maybe midfielders are the best sort of managers out there. For, you know, I don't know.
But look, if you've got any connection, as in football, you're a football man or whatever, then yeah, no doubt TT would get on this one. But what makes the best manager? Is it defence, midfield, or is it a striker who, you know, who
or
are
is
the,
it
the best 15... managers?
Is it the 10,000 to 15,000 that sit in the den on Saturdays? Yeah. I think we're the best managers. You know what I mean? So,
just go to a Millwall forum, mate, and you'll see all the armchair managers there, mate. Yeah. So,
go on, Kai. Sorry.
What position did Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer play?
He's a striker.
There we go.
Oh, well. I mean, Kenny Sheridan tried to be a manager. He was a striker. He failed.
I've got a couple of things before we end. Go on to Huddersfield and keep it on Huddersfield. Did you see the QPR offside rule?
Oh,
yeah. Unbelievable decision, wasn't
that
it?
That was bad, that.
Yeah,
very cool. And the fact that Middlesbrough won on the back of that. I mean, that was just... I mean, the trouble is there's nothing what can be done about it after the game.
I think it was about 6 yards out, wasn't it, to paint the picture?
Yeah.
And you've got the ball bounces off the attacker, but then it goes to the other attacker who tucks it away. But at the time, you've got the defender who's about 2 yards from the goal line, and the goalkeeper is also in between it as well.
And it was handball.
Yeah, and it was nowhere near offside at all.
No.
And a poor decision. And you're right. I suppose maybe that's an argument to have VAR in the Championship or below. I don't know. I don't think I'd enjoy that.
In the Championship, we've got Hawkeye.
Goal line to
the if you look on the top of the East Stand in the middle, you'll see... There's about 30, there's a little box, funny shaped box in the middle with loads of cameras, which does Hawkeye. So they've got the goal technology to see if the ball crosses the line, like what they use at Wimbledon and obviously at cricket. But I don't really want VAR. I think until we get it done, unless we're going to do it like they do in Australia, where everything's mic'd up and they're telling you what they're doing and everything else, then it's just so time consuming. At the Euros, it was really good, because it was just quite fast flowing. They didn't necessarily stop the game for hours on end. But for some reason in the Prem, they just seem to, you know, stop the game. And it could be an extra 10 minutes worth of fucking VAR decision.
I think they're getting better at it. I'm for the technology. But then as a fan that goes to the games, I'm not, if that makes sense.
Like, isn't football about... I mean, hard done by QPR, yes. If it was us, fucking hell, we'd be screaming blue murder. But isn't that what football's all about? Those decisions where you know that you were robbed, but it was, you know, the cup games, the FA Cup, where someone's won off fucking someone's arm what should have been a handball. Look at Lampard's goal, what wasn't a goal. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone could see it in the stadium that it was a goal, Yeah, no goal.
For Maradona.
But yeah, well, Maradona's just a cunt, but yeah. he was a good footballer, but it was still a cunt.
Still iconic. You're right. These moments, even though they're contentious, are still iconic. And instead of going to the games and then talking about debatable decisions afterwards in the pub, we're talking about the VAR instead. And my biggest fear was we wouldn't even have anything to talk about. But I suppose we've still got something to talk about when VAR does get it wrong, because it's still an opinion. It's still... not clear as day, black and white, especially, you know, with when it's looking back at red cards or fouls. No. But when it comes to offside, obviously, you've got the advantage of like kind of slowing it down and drawing the lines on the floor. I guess maybe if I think VAR now, if at hindsight, it'd been nice for VAR just be purely for the black and white decisions. Whereas when it comes to an incident where it's maybe a red card or not, maybe the referee can just see the replay himself and not be advised anyone in his ears. And maybe it's just up to him to decide, I've made one decision. Do I change it myself?
Yeah.
I don't know. Instead, when you see them go to the TV booth nowadays in the corner, when they've made a decision and they're told to go there, they always change their minds. It's because obviously they're told, go and look at it. And it's kind of implying already that they've made the wrong decision. But I'm a fan of VAR, I think, but it's tough.
If you've not seen the Australian way, have a look. If I can find a link, I'll put it on the show notes on this. But go have a look at the Australian way they do it and see if that would be the way you want. I mean, it's everything's mic'd up. It's very, say, very descriptive. It's a great way to watch because you know what's going on, why they make the decision and everything else about it, which is great because the problem now is that, you know, the referee could make a decision for whatever reason and you don't necessarily see it in the stand. But if you were having the mic and, you know, you knew what was going on. I mean, obviously, I don't think, you know, you probably get those little mic things you get at rugby or...
I'm sure we can get the channel that they have between themselves. They all communicate, don't they? The linos and the referees and stuff, because they have like that.
That challenge.
They wear.
That challenge.
But, what's that?
Is that a challenge? Should we find a scanner and take it to the ground and see if that we can be get great. On their but frequency? Like...
But it would be interesting, because I agree with you, the Australian ref is now in the Football League. He's trying to make his name in the UK on these channels, because that video that went viral when he was like talking to the referee, talking to the players, it'd be interesting to hear what they say. But I think it's more so they do it because they don't want to broadcast what the referees are talking about and what they should. Or even after the game, just the referee comes out and explains why he made the decision he did. But this has been debated a few times before, but it is definitely like one for debate and one for the future. It wouldn't surprise me for the neutral watching on TV on Sky on a Sunday afternoon, they probably will end up putting the referees like chat out there. I'm not a big rugby fan. I love watching it when the World Cup's on and the rugby union's on. And it is nice to hear what the referees say and what's going on. It is good to kind of see them mics up and you can hear what they're saying and what they're thinking when they make a decision, especially when they go to their video assistant referee as well. So
it's good when you're there, when you're at Twickenham, you can hear the mic, you know, you can, you have the mic in your ear and you can hear the decision when you don't know, you know, you don't see a penalty or you don't see something's happened. But when you've got it on the earpiece, you can go, especially if you've got someone with you. I mean, I've done loads of hospitality stuff at Twickenham with customers and stuff. And there's always a guy there who's banging to his rugby. He's always got the earpiece and he's telling everyone what's going on. Oh yeah, it's because of this blower. And it makes it a little bit that you know what's going on and stuff. But yeah, one more thing before we move on to Huddersfield. And I'll take your opinion. I'll take your views on it. Yeah. Ty MFC or Tay MFC on Twitter yesterday went, or was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. Went and watched West Ham. I know you're doing the 92 clubs or the 72 clubs. I understand that. But if you're a Millwall fan, you do not go to our rival. And our biggest rival across history, and you'd have to be a fucking mumpty not to know it, is West Ham. And why would you, one, go watch a game at West Ham and give that fucking scummy cunts even a pound, as you were alleging it was? And two, why would you post it across your website, you know, across your Twitter handle and all that? And you can come out and print all the pictures you want of showing you in a Millwall shirt with Arsenal shorts on and show that you've been on the pitch and everything else. That's great. But you're either Millwall solely or you're not Millwall. You support football. There is no, you know, we're not, to me personally, I don't think we're a group of fans what have two football clubs. I know there's some who might have a European club and Millwall and Rangers as such, but you're not one of these what go, oh yeah, Millwall's my championship club, but I've got this club as my premiership club. That's just not how supporting Millwall works, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, to them, let's talk about it as well. I don't know. It is a debatable one. I think a lot of people are into ground hopping, ain't they, nowadays, like you said, and going to the 92 grounds and stuff like that. It is an interesting one, I think. It's a contentious one. I don't know what you think, Kai.
To be fair, if I'm going to, when I like to go and watch
just
football
be
matches.
Be careful, because you could be edited straight off now if you say the wrong thing. If you mention that you'll go to West Ham, I will withdraw you straight off.
I will not say I will go to West Ham. Absolutely never. No, what I was going to say is that I don't mind going to a non-league, like a Bromley. Love going to have a little watch of Bromley, just because it's my local team, like, you know, just down the road. But I wouldn't probably go to another championship, either League One, League Two or Premier League, just for fun. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, going to non-leagues, great. You know, look, Fisher FC, round the corner, you get discount with your season ticket there, being a Millwall fan and whatnot. So, yeah, look, that's great. And Fisher's a great local club. Same as Bromley. Bromley's got loads of ex-Millwall players there. It's a good local club. Going non-league is not the same as going to West Ham.
No, I agree, definitely.
And I mean, I know years ago, if you speak to the older generation, you know, 55, 60 year old upwards who've been going Millwall, they, you know, and even Nick spoken about it, where, you know, you'll go Millwall when they're at home, because a lot of the time back then, a lot of the younger kids never went away from home. So you'd have Millwall on one Saturday, Charlton or Palace on the next Saturday, hence where the reputation of the rivalry between them, because then you had, you know, you'll go Charlton this Saturday because Millwall were away, and then Millwall's at home following week, so you'll go Millwall. So you'll get to see football every week, but it's all local. And I can understand that, because that's how it was. But then it's streamed and you become Millwall. And yes, you might follow other teams as in see what their results are, but there is no way in a million years that I'll go, yeah, okay, you might go hospitality, and I would not go to West Ham. I've got customers what are fucking box holders at West Ham and keep joking, oh, you're really invited. No, I'm not going. I would not set foot in a taxpayer-funded stadium, pure and simply because it is who it is. Us as Millwall, we don't fucking... Well, we look at the shit when we done Friday Night Live, and I had a burgundy fucking jumper on, sweatshirt jacket jumper on, and I got ruined for that. So, no, I
wouldn't go to West Ham myself. Personally, I wouldn't go to any, you know, probably I wouldn't go to any League Two, League One, Championship or Premier League club, apart from if I'm going to watch Millwall there. Obviously Huddersfield on Saturday is different, but only if we're following Millwall. I'd never go to a neutral game without Millwall.
And I wouldn't get into the debate, you know. I mean, look, you get in there going, oh well, you call me not a Millwall fan, I am here. Stop digging yourself a fucking hole, fella. Just leave it alone, ignore it, it will go away. But the more you keep fucking poking, the more the Millwall fans are going to fucking round you up. And you're just going to dig yourself out for no reason. If you went for a pound, fair enough, you went for a pound. But why the fuck tell everyone about it? I couldn't give a fuck if you're filling out your 92. Who gives a fuck? Fill out your 92 by going around following Millwall. It takes longer, but at least you get to see new games. I mean, Kai, you been to Huddersfield before?
No, I've never been to Huddersfield.
You're ticking off a ground on Saturday what you're going to for the first time, right?
Yep.
There you go. On the board, there's a tick. Do you know what? You're not going to get the tick for West Ham unless we get them in a cup game. Right? And that's as simple as that.
No, next season when we get West Ham away. Don't worry.
You know, we will get there. But I just don't agree with fucking... Everything nowadays is about likes and fucking... Oh, look at me. He probably just wants a bit of fucking claim and see if he can get on the thing. One more thing before we go. I have to say it because it's fucking driving me mad, right? Football Weekly. What's it called? Football League Weekly.
Football League World.
Yeah, Football League World. There we go. It's an FLW. Fucking lazy wankers would be the right wording for them. But yeah, right. They are part of a media organisation, right? And they tried to do... They're the same people who had done the Football Contents Awards and all that, where Millwall was up for fucking everything and anything. And they had some great categories. Mill were in there. The charity was in there. Nick Hart was on there. You know, fucking our mentor. We went on and then we'd done our show from back of, you know, him. You've got fucking Fatty from fucking YouTube. You've got all of them who were up for awards on there, right? got nothing. Well, they come to us a month and a half, 2 months ago, wanting to do a Millwall special with us. And Kai said, have a look at them. See what they've been writing so much negative stuff about us for clickbait through the booing and everything else that they fucking ruined us on their stories or their reporters playing a team, but it would be as if we weren't actually playing that game because everything was written about the opposition team and fuck all about us. And then they put something out today with a video that looks as if it's about 4 weeks old talking how shit we're playing when, you know, it's all different and Jed's going to leave us and he's doing this and we're doing that. They're just thingy. So, look, I'm really sorry that the guys who are up for awards didn't get an award because you are deserving of an award. You're great at what you do, but I just, you know, they fucking ruined us in the press the last 6 months or so, and it was no surprise really that you didn't get it. But you know what, onwards and upwards, mate. And I think the people who actually matter and listen to your shows respect and understand what you do. I quite like that fucking lazy bastards. It's a fucking lazy wankers. That's got a nice ring to it.
You've done that off the cuff as well, unless you thought about it before you came on today.
No, I didn't actually. It was just FLW. It's just sticking in my head. And I just went, oh, yeah. So, yeah, look, I am quite quick some days, mate. Other days, I'm just a lazy fat cunt. But yeah.
Nice. Well, I think that's the end of part one, isn't it?
I think so. I think right. I've upset a lot of people there. So, yeah, there we go.
But, cool. Yeah. We're back in a second after this, and we'll be talking all about Saturday's away game at not the Gale Farm, not the John Smith Stadium, the Kelly Stadium now, and that's at Huddersfield Town. Back shortly. It's the Kirkless Stadium. Either way, stadium sponsors, not a big fan of it. What do you reckon, Kai? Don't like it myself.
No, I didn't even know it was called the Kirkless. I still called it the. I wrote the blog for the newsletter this week. I put the St. John Smith Stadium.
I call it the Gale Farm from when I first went to it many years ago. It's like it's
football. Yeah, they change all the time, don't they?
It's where the money is. There's any way to sell the rights. I mean, what would the appropriate sponsor be for Millwall? I don't know.
The Carlsberg, the Husky Den,
the Carlsberg Den. I was going to go with
probably the best football team in the world. Yeah, you could have that then, couldn't you?
The Carlsberg Den would be quite. I wouldn't mind that one. The Carlsberg Den at a push, or the Stella Den, the Artois Den. There's a theme to my ones. It's nothing to do with the fact that I drink beer probably too much, but yeah.
Or the London Gin Den.
The London Gin Den, yeah. Your home is your home. You know, you think of the Den. You know, even the Emirates being called the Emirates, I can tolerate because that's what helped them build that stadium. But you know, it's better to have your home name be. Where your ground is called, really, I think, personally. You
look at the Newcastle Stadium, it's now called the Leasing. What is it called? The Leasing Stadium?
No. Be careful. Get the right name. Get the right name for it now. What's it called? I think it's something like the Leasing Hire Vehicle Rental Service.
Shut up.
Is it really? It is, yeah.
Something like that.
I want to check this 1 second. Reading. Standings, Reading. This is great airtime, so you know, one of you help me fill it in for me whilst I verify this for you.
I've just looked, and they've got the it works with Huddersfield. What's it called? It's called the Reach Data Unit, which is done the Costa Football Projects carried out, and it's basically rated Huddersfield as the joint second cheapest season tickets in the Championship.
Nice niche. Reading's home stadium is called the Select Car Leasing Stadium. Unbelievable.
There you go. Wow. There you go. See?
That's just wrong. If you're a Reading fan, what are you thinking when you see that? I don't know. Even when, like, Bet365 Stadium, I was Stoke. Anyway, enough of that anyway. Let's talk a bit about Saturday's game, chaps. And obviously, we're going to the Gale Farm Stadium on Saturday. Kai, look forward to it?
Buzzing. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm 4 wins out of 5. We're on a really good run of form, and hopefully we can make it 5 out of 6.
That's it. 4 wins out of 5. Third place in the form table after the last 10. Looking like we're meaning business. It's inevitable we're going to go all the way out there and watch us lose 1-0 in the last minute. But, I'm looking forward to it too. You know, Huddersfield's a similar sort of team. You know, they were in good form earlier in the season. They still find themselves like us on 21 points. Similar sort of record as well. One goal difference. Scored 18 though. A bit more than us. 3 more. And conceded 17. Last time out, they lost 3-0 against Bournemouth. We all know what Bournemouth's about. And we've got Bournemouth coming in a few weeks' time, haven't we, to the Den. So it's going to be a tough game when that pops up. But it's going to be a tricky game, Mickey, isn't it? And hopefully we can go there and, like I said, be positive, maybe get the 3 points we're all desperately wanting.
Yeah, I think we get it. I think it's all about being positive. And I've been positive the last two games and we got the results. And I think we're going to go do it again. I think we're going to go out there and I think we're going to go 2-0.
Wow, straight with the prediction as well, mate. I love it. I think the thing is, right, we're all positive. This is where, like, we'll talk about in the first part of the show, set up, formation. If the manager sets the team up in a positive fashion, Kai, that's the key here, isn't it? But we're away from home also, so maybe we do need to edge our way into the game, and it might lend it to that. It's the catch-22, but we're done talking about that anyway. But it'd be a tricky place to go, Huddersfield. I thought at first, early in the season, they were really struggling. But they seem to get a good little run of form together before they played Bournemouth. And I'm pretty sure they'll be keen to avenge that on Saturday against us.
Definitely. They've had a week off like us to, you know, rest tired legs, get their players back. And, you know, we've got a couple of players coming back ourselves. I think Mason Bennett could potentially be in the squad. I've read he took out some light training earlier in the week. George Saville is back after his one match ban. Benik Afobe's back after not being able to face Stoke. I think the only injury will be George Evans, I think. Is that if I'm right in saying? I think... sidelined until potentially after the international break. Another international break, can you believe it? Looking forward to Saturday. And I think he probably will play at five. But after, you know, our performance the other day and show, you know, what Ojo showed he could do and Jed, you know, both sides, even if we do play at five, I don't think, you know, I think we've got the attacking quality to break teams down anyway.
Definitely. I mean, Huddersfield's always been a tricky place to go for us in general. Obviously, we had them in the playoffs about, 10, 11 years ago when we went there and got a 0-0 draw, beat them at the Den, that famous night where Morrison and Robertson scored. In recent times, it's not been the greatest of hunting grounds. I can't remember the last time we won up there. It's something I should probably have to hand at the moment.
Last season.
Did we win it there last season?
Malone scored, remember?
Last season's gone. That memory last season's gone. But before that, as in going to the games... Last season doesn't exist. For me, it doesn't exist.
The guru got you.
It doesn't exist.
I'm doing the prediction league, Omar.
I don't do the prediction league anymore. I don't know what I'm about. Last season doesn't exist in my memory. And if you don't count that as in your memory, then fair play.
Francis Cowell missed the penalty as well, didn't he?
Yes, that is it. Okay. Yeah, no, that is in the memory. But. Kai is the Millwall stato during COVID. I don't count COVID.
Omar, do you remember who brought him down?
No, I don't.
Thompson.
Oh, there you go. Oh, when he slips in the box. It was a rainy night, 1-0 win away from home. Yeah. We did win 1-0 away from home when Ryan Lennon played right centre half and got injured afterwards.
That's right.
Yes, you see. I remember it. I don't talk about COVID times. Anyway, in general...
We're going to have a new feature soon. It's going to be Battle of the Football Brains between these two, I think.
I think that'd be a great conversation.
There's a new YouTube video coming, mate. I'm going to make questions and I'm going to put it to them and see what they can do. So, definitely...
Anyway, danger men for Huddersfield that I've always look out for. Lewis O'Brien in midfield is a decent midfielder, always highly rated in championship standards. Obviously, up front, Josh Caroma, ex-Leyton Orient, ex-New Cross boy, by the way. You know, he's local to the area. One that slipped through Millwall's radar, I think, there with Josh Caroma. And could have been interesting if we got him ourselves. But he's always lively. Scored against us last season during COVID times at the Den, if I'm not mistaken, Kai.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
and
yeah,
he did. 3-0 yeah. That day, didn't we?
3-0. That's right. Oh, yeah.
There you go. He's back.
Yeah. You're right. You're right.
There you go. Yeah. So you see, it's
welcome.
It's
the score is now 1-1.
But obviously, Danny Ward's been a veteran around this level for a while. Tom Lee's at the back. You know, it's going to be a tricky game. Obviously, Levi Colwill's on loan from Chelsea as well. Harry Toffolo, ex Millwall player, left back. So it'd be interesting what to expect from this Huddersfield team. I'm not sure, but I think hopefully the workmanlike Millwall performance where we edge our way into the game might prevail. And I'm hopeful we can get a good result Saturday, Kai. Mickey says 2-0. Go on, give me your prediction, mate.
I'll go slightly more reserved, 1-0.
Nice.
Okay. I think it's going to be a late winner. I think we're probably going to frustrate Huddersfield and then, you know, nick it, you know, with 5 minutes to go. I don't think Afobe will start on Saturday after Bradshaw's scored two. I reckon I'm going to back him off the bench, back him to come off the bench and score the winner.
Just to prove my point, right? in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In 8 visits to the Gal Farm, we've only won once, and that was last season. Before that was James Henry scoring the last minute we raced away from goal in 2009.
James Henry.
Remember that name?
Well, yeah. Man.
I remember it well. I think
he's the man who got thrown in front of a police dog by Alan Dunn, wasn't he?
He was. So yeah, we literally last kick of the game, we managed to win that game. And then before that, we've only won at the Gal Farm twice. You know what I mean? So it's a tricky place to go. But, you know, omens are there to be broken. I'm going to agree with Kai's prediction because that was what I was thinking. So I'm not going to change it because he said it. I think 1-0, and I also think it'll be a late winner. I'm going to say Jake Cooper. And
outside the box with a left foot strike or
rocket shot. Yeah.
I think you know he's got a little rich vein of form of scoring goals after the last away game. So you know Lightning might strike twice. Strike Jonathan Ross over here. Lightning might strike twice. You never know. Go on, Mickey.
It's
you want to say something? Say it.
It's
go on,
today
say
it. A fuck up today, isn't it? But yeah. It's great. We don't pretend to be professional. We do fuck up. Omar's proven that. Many times
I'm blaming my dog. She's sitting on my lap. She's putting me off. There you go. I'm blaming my dog.
Welcome to Willow. Hello, Willow.
Hello, Willow.
Start the hashtag. Hello, Willow. Just confuse every fucker. I bet if you did try to start that, everyone would be going, oh, it's Buffy. There's a remix of Buffy. There's Buffy coming.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that went over Kai's head, that one.
My daughter's 14 and she's just got back. She's got into Buffy and Angel, so she's started watching it. Buffy was a vampire teen drama from
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. No,
from the 90s, 90 odd something.
It I never started, really watched it.
Same sort of time as Friends. Sort of.
I've never watched Friends.
Really.
I've tried to get into it. I missed the boat with Friends. But
I'm more up to like modern ones. Like I watch, you probably don't know. I'm currently watching Modern Family.
Okay, yeah.
What about How I Met Your Mother?
That's very good.
Iconic.
Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah. Superstore.
Yeah.
You watch that one?
I want to watch a little bit of a general Netflix and Amazon talk here. I want to watch Ted Lasso. You seen Ted Lasso?
Oh, you've got to pay for it. That's the only problem, isn't it?
I've got Amazon Prime, so.
It's on Apple.
That's it, sorry.
Yeah. You have to do it. Purple helps you.
I don't know what Purple is. That's why.
TTKK. I'll tell you what I just watched. We watched a little while ago, me and my missus watched, was Sex Education. That was quite funny. Mm-hmm. The new thing. That was quite funny. Ted Lasso. I think I've seen one series or half a dozen episodes of that, and it was all right. I'll get Apple on my phone. That was all right. Well, I mean, yeah, there are some good shows out there, but yeah, it's finding them, I suppose. But yeah.
Watch this space.
Dream team.
I like a soap. That's my problem. I like a soap.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Harchester United, my favourite team.
Do you know who Harchester United is?
Nah, I've never heard of it.
Oh my God.
Right, Kai, you need to go on YouTube and search Dream Team and start watching it because Harchester United play at the best stadium in the world.
Mm-hmm. Is it the Den?
It was a Sky show.
Why have I seen that?
It's a great show.
You probably was about one when it was aired on TV.
I don't even think he was probably born, to be fair. Because you were born in 95, weren't you, Omar? When were you born?
95, yeah.
Yeah, so Omar, when were you born?
Kai
even. When were you born?
2003.
Fucking hell, yeah.
No, you probably wasn't even born.
I mean, you said you haven't watched Friends. You've got to watch an episode at least of Friends. I've never seen Star Wars from start to finish.
I've never watched Harry Potter or Star Wars, anything like that.
I don't like Star Wars. I like Harry Potter.
Or Lord of the Rings.
No, I've never watched that.
Yeah. From start to finish.
If you've enjoyed this section, maybe we can do a bonus podcast talking about TV shows. But
I think we should, you know.
See what the interaction is like on that one.
tell us what to watch on Netflix, Prime and Amazon. And maybe we can watch it. Just one thing before we go.
I've never heard of Netflix. What's Netflix?
Oh, fuck off. My kids do that to me. Netflix, there you go, right? Just a quick question. Is Breaking Bad that good?
Didn't like it, really.
I've never watched it. I don't know.
And it's the same as Peaky Blinders. I want to get into that.
Literally stole the words out of my mouth. I was the same with Peaky Blinders. Didn't like it either, really. It was good, Peaky Blinders. You literally, I don't know how you went on the same tangent as me there. I was literally about to go, didn't really like Peaky Blinders either. It was good, but it wasn't worth the hype, if that makes sense. So there you
I've got into a couple of it and I didn't really get into it, but I can watch Peaky Blinder clips and go on a YouTube rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really, you know, see loads of different ones, and it's great there. But actually watching it as a film, maybe it gets better watching it as a series. Maybe it gets better a few, you know, good few episodes in. But yeah, same as Breaking Bad. It was like I watched about six or seven in, and it just really didn't really get into it.
Have you watched the Three Fear Streets? The something of Fear Street, or I can't remember what it's called.
Oh yeah, there's Fear Street 1994 or something.
That's it, yeah.
I haven't watched that. But you lot missed Nightmare on Elm Street.
Don't know what it is.
No, see? I've never heard of that.
Freddy Krueger. One, two, Freddy's gonna get you.
I've heard that, three, but I don't know where it's from. Can tell you.
Better lock the door.
I think I'm gonna be the adjudicator here and say Cool Time or Mill does Mill podcast does Gobble
Box. Yeah, definitely.
We'll be back soon with a bit more bonus features and bonus content. Maybe we'll put it on our Patreon. Or whatever ones are the pay subscriptions. Yeah, we'll put it on our Patreon.
We don't have any of them, but yeah, just you know. Don't worry.
TikTok though, so that's different, isn't it?
The full unedited version will be up for patrons tonight.
Yeah.
Otherwise the edited version will be up tomorrow for you normal peasants.
Monthly membership of £500 and a box of jelly deals.
Don't forget we do a live chat where you can chump me. And give me some money.
Yeah, that's it. Right, anyway, we're going to call it there, guys. As always, thank you so much for watching and tuning in today. If you're listening on audio, be sure to leave us a review. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to subscribe if you're new. I mean, we don't normally talk about TV shows, but if you've enjoyed that, like I said, let us know. And tell us what your favourite box set is. Something to binge.
Ooh,
there you go.
Box set. Christ, I don't even know what a fucking box set is.
Yeah. What's your VHS is, Kai?
What about Betamax? Cool.
We're going here.
No.
Have you seen Only Fools and Horses?
No. Oh no, I have. Yes.
Oh, fuck it.
Wait a second. Is that the one with the big guy in the hotel?
I'm gonna end it now.
No.
I'm gonna go. Because Kai's gonna lose our subscribers on YouTube. We've got to go. We'll be back on Sunday for hopefully some bonus Millwall wins to talk about. So
don't forget to look out. We're going to be doing two live shows in November to talk football shirts from the 80s up until modern day. So make sure you subscribe, because when we put the notifications out that we'll be going live for two Fridays back to back, you won't miss it. So, yeah, make sure you do that. Subscribe to the YouTube. That's it, Kai. I can't believe
that's the end of the show. Yeah. Don't. If you want us to get rid of Kai because he doesn't know who Only Fools and Horses are, it's fine. We'll sort it out and just let us know what you want us to do. So, back soon, guys. Cheers.